Hello and welcome to the second episode of Gamers Without Borders. I am Patrick Mifflin alongside Teresa Sammons and Kayla Owen. Lee is otherwise indisposed tonight, and our thoughts are certainly with him, as work does as work will do. Tonight we'll be talking about import gaming and how to get into it if you haven't taken that step yet. I'm going into some real detail on our own experiences with import gaming before we move on to one of the consoles that really defined import gaming for an entire era and probably created a lot of import gamers in its own right. So to start off, we should probably talk about modern import gaming. Do either of you pick up any import games online or locally, even if you have the option for modern hardware?
Haven't. In a while. No. What about you, Kayla?
Well, for modern hardware, so I can avoid finder's fees, I just buy things on the eShop or on PlayStation Network now.
Setting up your own account? Yeah, that I never actually got around to doing that on the PS4 because don't you have to, like, be signed into that account to play content that you bought on there, or can you play across accounts like you could on the PS3?
You can play across accounts.
Well, crap, I've been missing out then. I know what I'll be doing this weekend. Have you bought any physical games, or have you managed to avoid that?
I don't think I've really bought any physical games that are imports that are modern consoles, just because, again, if I go to, like, my usual shop, the games are about $75 to $100 as opposed to just paying a normal price on the eShop these days.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah, so that's cost prohibitive right there.
It is. And it's kind of scary when you think that that's kind of where we're going with domestic games at this point. Obviously, we're recording this on November 11th, so we're smack between the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 launches, but they did get me once this generation. There was a Kamen Rider Arena battle game that came out on the PS4 that I picked up, and that was actually kind of cool because it was an Asian release. Like, it was the quote unquote Asian market, which is everything outside of Japan. And those get quite often released with English options. So that is something to keep in mind if you're an import gamer. But the game itself was just not up to the standard that I usually expect from Kamen Rider titles. Obviously, for longtime listeners of Let's Weekend, you all know I'm a tokusatsu geek to the core. So sometimes that bites you when you're buying video games based on those properties. That being said, if you find a lot of games that you like and you don't have your Japanese account set up, or you just, for some reason, that game in particular you want to own the physical copy of, PlayAsia is pretty much the gold standard for online retail. Although, as previously mentioned, you do tend to get finder's fees because, you know, they're paying pretty much retail to get the games in, and then they got to stay in business, and that falls on us, the customers. But
yeah,
if you're really looking for something, though, I do have to say it's a good way to go. For that cost prohibitive reason, I really haven't looked too closely at 8th generation imports, although that might be something worth circling back and taking a look at, since I'm sitting out at least the launches of 9th generation. And still definitely plenty of room for games to add to my library.
Yeah, there's like some really cool kawaii type stuff that I don't think I would find on Virtual Console that PlayAsia has. And, you know, that could be something. But I think that there could be a big language barrier with this one that I'm looking at in particular.
Oh, which one is that?
I'm going to butcher this. Auchi de Rilla Kuma. Rillakuma, something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's a cute little Sanrio looking thing. So, it looks
those can nice. Have very dense Japanese in them, though. I will admit.
Yeah. So, these three little animals come and live in your house and play with toys and sometimes make a mess and scribble on the wall. So without a guide, I don't think I would do really well unless it has English baked in.
Yeah, and that's when you start looking for maybe Asian region releases and see if it's got that in there. I remember going back a ways now to the PS1, trying out the Choro Q series for the first time, which are these really just cutesy-looking racing games. It's almost like a Japanese version of Cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the cars themselves are characters unto themselves and everything, and it looks like something that you'd pick up and just and get for, you know, a 7 or 8 year old. You pick that game up and the Japanese is dense as fuck. Like, I have a lot of experience playing import games, and I have pretty good understanding of katakana and hiragana and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I was lost. Like, I was I fired that game up. I eventually found, like, what I'm guessing was the arcade mode. But mm-hmm. I'm looking at this 15-item list of main menu items. I have, like, I can read most of them. I was completely fucked on the kanji. But I was able to ascertain what most of them were for. But some of them were like blocked out and I didn't understand why. It was just a really weird experience, but I mean, I had a blast when I was when I was actually in a race playing it.
Mm-hmm.
But oh man, the language barrier on that was brutal, and it didn't look like at all like a game that you would think would have that kind of language barrier.
But they do.
They do.
Yeah.
But going back to legacy platforms, we definitely had it worse back in the day because finder's fees were kind of the least of our problems. And the profiteers were all over the place. But the worst of it had to be the fact that simultaneously the best and worst importer by far was called Byrite. And they were just this really shady operation out of North Carolina. Somehow they managed to maintain a spectacular selection, which is why they stayed in business as long as they did.
Like, what years was this?
They had a run from about 1995 to 2005, I want to say.
Mm.
I bought quite a few games from them myself. Mostly Saturn and Neo Geo Pocket titles. I did not feel like the least bit secured in my purchase until the moment they arrived because, and we talked about this before the show, like imagine what would happen to an online retailer today that did not offer you a tracking number for your order. And this was also back when COD was a thing. So some people were getting shipments from them and finding out that they were charged like 5 times the shipping costs expected and getting their order like a month late. They were just a bad retail outlet that you still had to do business with for the simple fact that that's where the games were, that's where the supply was. It was a good day when they went out of business, but oh God, I was still on the GameSpot community team when that happened. And I actually posted the thread about them going out of business and I called it graveyard pissings.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was what I wanted the entire thread to be and what it inevitably became. We were getting horror stories from people up to and including Jeff Gerstmann. If you were an import gamer during that era, Byrite probably got you at one time or another.
Yeah.
But thankfully, our retailers today, even if we do have finder's fees to deal with, are far more
palatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have integrity.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember there was a local shop by me in Hanover Park, I think. It was outside of a shopping plaza that had a Walmart in it. So it was well trafficked. And most of their games were like $80 to $100. And so I never bought one from them ever.
Yeah.
It was just too much. But somehow I ended up with a Doraemon Game Boy game. I have no idea where I picked it up.
Somehow it materialized.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been like a yard sale or something. But yeah, I never could pull the trigger and buy anything from that particular game shop. It was just so much money.
Yeah. Especially back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're looking to import for legacy platforms these days, then your best bet is probably going to be emulation, while staying above board and tracking down copies of the games. If you can find a 5-in-1 Sega Saturn converter, like I talked about last week, then you're pretty much good to go on that. But with things like the PS1, you're probably really just better off going with an emulator, or especially anything in the sixth generation mix.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point you were basically forced to go into your system. I think PS2's gotten better now, but my personal experiences with it have been very hit and miss. And especially with the disk drive starting to go on them. I mean, this is a system that's been out for 20 years.
Yeah. There's age.
Yeah. And so either find your PS2 hardware and install a hard drive loader or something, or go for emulation, because it's really just a headache that's not as worth it these days, I find.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your mileage may vary depending on what kind of computer hardware you might be working with, or how handy you might be with actual going into the system and doing your DIY work there. Apart from that, another big barrier people find, and this kind of stands to reason, is language barriers. And so I wanted to take a moment to talk about our own personal experiences with language barriers and imports. And Teresa, I guess we've already covered some of what you've encountered, but maybe put together a few pointers for people who may be hesitant to take that step and develop enough of an understanding to learn their way around most Japanese games. So we'll start. Kayla, how did you go about it?
Well, I went about it kind of in a more difficult direction when I was a kid, because I had a lot of patience and I would just play, basically. I would just try and take notes and try and figure out what things did what. Like when I was playing a JRPG, for example. These days, I don't really have that amount of time on my hands. So the best thing that I found to do is to get on YouTube and try and find, basically just try and find explanations for things and search for translations online, because there always seems to be some sort of translation, especially for JRPGs.
Oh, yeah.
And also just try and, if you're not patient enough for that, the best thing I can also recommend is to try and find games that don't necessarily have a language barrier, because there's a lot of shooters and a lot of fighting games that don't have a language barrier. And a lot of them are cheaper to buy from Japan. The Japanese versions are much cheaper to buy than the American versions.
Yeah. And even in some cases, when there is limited Japanese, there's like a small handful of keywords that you can learn over time that will open up many, many doors to you for making accessible new games. Like if you learn to read the words save and load or arcade mode, options, things like that. I eventually developed that ability. It took some time. Yeah, it just having that basic cursory understanding will go a long way, because it stands to reason that most people are only going to think of Japanese in the sense of communicating. But the fact of the matter is, learning Japanese for communicating and learning Japanese for navigating game menus are two very different things. And if you can kind of compartmentalize it like that, then it becomes a lot less intimidating. And you can actually use that as a stepping stone. Like if you start learning to read the katakana or the hiragana in your game menus, then you can take that understanding to maybe start translating, say, items on the back of a game box to find out what features they have, or everyday signs that you see in your games that have Japanese in them. You might walk by some store signage or something, and you can use that as an active exercise for picking up the language. And then eventually you can kind of translate that into a starting point for conversational Japanese. That's kind of the fence that I'm sitting on at the moment. I'm by no means claiming to be in any way prepared to start conversational Japanese, but I have found that it is a very strong gateway to that. One thing, like for me, I started with emulating imports because, you know, there were a lot of fighting games and RPGs on the Super NES that we didn't get over here. Lee talked about a lot of them last week. And I started by trying to figure out character names. And so, like, in some cases, I knew what the character names were. And so I was just looking at the characters that were on the screen. And then eventually I started picking up how they were pronounced and so on and so forth. And that, I dove in the deep end because that was where I started, where I should have started by reading the menus and learning that way. So I kind of worked my way backwards by using the characters that were in, like, character names and whatnot, and then using the pieces of those names to piece together what the menus were saying. And it took for fucking ever. Like, we're talking probably a good 10 years that I was just doing that. But, you know, I learned it as I went, and I eventually, you know, developed that understanding where, okay, now I can navigate menus reliably. Now I do know what this is saying. Okay, now maybe this game over here isn't so intimidating. And I just did that more and more and more. And it kind of hit a critical mass about 11, 12 years ago when I went on Play Asia. Another shout out to them. I went on Play Asia and bought just a straight up Japanese PlayStation 2. And I started piling up games for it, all purchased from Play Asia. That was expensive, but it was absolutely a rewarding experience. Like, I took my greatest strides as an import gamer just doing that. And to this day, I have like 35 Japanese PS2 games that I just accumulated from that time frame. And again, like I said, I don't pretend to be in any way prepared for a Japanese conversation, but I feel like I could start studying it and have a leg up and, you know, be ahead of the average beginner who's just starting to study the language today. Teresa, have you attack language barriers at all, or did
yeah, back in the day I did, and I believe it was something like GameFAQs that I went to.
That's a good place.
Yeah, and they kind of just walked you through, like, not visually, because, you know, it was all text, But they would say the first option is save, second option is load, yep. You know, third option is settings, or and then
you start to remember what they look like.
You do, and but now the dialogue.
That's a whole other thing. The dialogue, you meet up with an entirely different alphabet called Kanji.
Yeah.
And that's where the average foreigner is well and truly fucked.
Yeah, and then you absolutely have to rely on, you know, the fans who have gone in and translated.
Yep.
Which, I mean, they were doing great work. It largely unrecognized, I'm sure. But they made the games accessible to so many.
They are the unsung heroes of import gaming, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did with a few of them. I tried one RPG, and man, that was just, it was too much. I was going back and forth, you know.
That's the real deep end.
Right.
I was playing fighting games and shoot 'em ups, and I felt a little overwhelmed at times. I can't imagine what it would be like just.
I can't even remember what it was, but yeah. Yeah, it was bananas.
If you want a demonstration that your grasp of the JRPG genre may not be exactly what you think it is, just try going into a modern import JRPG unprepared.
Yeah, nope.
The Legend of Heroes Trails to Zero. Yeah, have fun. But one thing that I've found is a really good reference point for getting started, at least, is Wikipedia. Just the katakana and hiragana pages on Wikipedia tell you everything that you need to know. You can bookmark them and have them ready for, you know, to be referenced at any time. And obviously it's not going to help you with the conversational aspect again, but it will help you. It will go a long way in helping you understand what the menus are saying, or what a certain mode might be, or what a character's name might be, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's a starting point. And if you just internalize that as you go, that repetition will really start to pay off. And it was kind of crazy because, like, I distinctly remember getting all the katakana memorized.
Mm-hmm.
Hiragana snuck up on me. Like, there was just one day I was sitting there going over, I forget what I was playing. It was on the PS3. But I was just reading hiragana like it was no problem at all. And I had to stop, realize, like, no, my handle on hiragana is not this good. And so I went to that reference point, to Wikipedia's page on hiragana, and holy shit, I actually do have it down. And so that repetition, just keep at it, keep challenging yourself, keep trying to read the signs that you see in the backgrounds of your games, and it's all a learning experience. It all helps you internalize it. And so if you're looking to learn Japanese for that reason, that is my personal recommendation, at least.
Oh, I just wanted to bring up that if you're having problems and you want to play games that will teach you Japanese, there's a lot of games out there that were meant for kids to learn English. Like, I have a Popeye game for the Famicom, and you can basically learn a little bit of Japanese by playing kids' games that were meant to teach kids English.
I can see that working really well. Another thing I would mention as well is that there are now games that are purpose-made to teach you Japanese, teach you other languages, in fact. And I haven't tried any of them myself. I've got one on my Steam account that I have not started yet and probably should. But that is absolutely something to keep in mind. Now you do have the purpose-made titles to that same end. Moving on to that, from that, I thought it would be good to talk about what is far and away one of the top systems that has probably created the most import gamers out of any system ever, and that is the Sega Saturn. This is a system that, depending on how you approached it, you had two very different experiences. In the West, they kind of just got caught up in the wake of the arrival of the PlayStation and some bad decisions that were made in the R&D stage, and they just kind of took a powder in the middle of the generation. Bernie Stolar, the Sega of America head at the time, did not help matters by more or less declaring war on JRPGs and trying to turn the system into a primarily sports game driven dude bro machine. In Japan, it definitely had a full lifespan. It lived to see the Sega Dreamcast arrive. And when the North American market kind of fell through for Sega, there were a lot of gamers who dropped it at that point, and a lot of others who started turning an eye to that Japanese market, and I was absolutely one of them. How about either of you?
I mean, it was easy to we just had to have like the ST key or something like that, plug it in and good to go. Yep.
That cartridge slot's there for a reason.
Yeah. There was one, and in this day and age, I have no reason to still be salty about this because I could probably easily find it today. But there was one game that I wanted to get that was out in Japan and never made it here. And I never did, and I still haven't, I haven't found it and emulated it since then. But it was some platforming game in the Bubble Bobble universe.
Oh.
I don't even know what it is.
I do. It was also on the TurboGrafx, if I remember correctly.
Oh, really? Okay. Let me see. 32-bit Bubble Bobble. I'm sure I can find it.
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of research on the spot here myself.
Yeah. Okay, it's Saturn. Because that just... You guys know Google.
Yeah, that actually found its way over here on the TurboGrafx, I should add.
Rainbow Islands. That's what it was. Rainbow Islands. So
that's not the game I thought it was.
Well, maybe this is it. I don't know. No, is this it? It must be it.
Parasol Stars?
No, that doesn't ring a bell. Ah, it's too many years. But whatever it was.
I didn't know there was a Saturn version of that. I'm looking at a list right now.
Well, whatever it was, I remember it was like around 99 when I found out about it, which was really late in Saturn time, but we still had ours.
It was definitely the import era of the Saturn.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to play it. And maybe I will. Maybe I'll find out where it is. And because all the things that we didn't get to do before, as long as we have time now, we certainly can.
I mean, that's the entire spirit of everything we're doing on this podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even soundtracks that go along with the import games, things like that. We can make that happen. Things like that it's mind-blowing. If you guys had told me this in 99, I would have been like, oh my god, where's the flying cars too? Because it can't get any better.
Oh, I found it.
What was it?
Bubble Bobble, also featuring Rainbow Islands.
Okay, I guess that was it.
And, just a moment. This is... just gotta pull this up. So I'm not sure exactly how rare this is, but you wouldn't have had to import.
It did come to the US.
Yeah, it does have that unfortunate Acclaim branding on it, but yeah, it got here. And apparently there's a PlayStation version as well.
Okay.
So,
yep.
All right. Kayla, what was your experience with the Saturn like?
Well, I pretty much skipped over to Saturn after the debacle of the 32X because Sega had just burned their bridges with me. It wasn't until 2003 when you actually told me about how Saturn was the best place at the time to get arcade accurate fighting games that I actually started to get interested in the Saturn. And to this day, I think it's still the best place to get games like Mortal Kombat 2 and Street Fighter Collection.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I don't have most of my Saturn games anymore. And the ones that I do have suffered from disc rot. So some of them don't have music anymore. A couple of them just will play once in a while. And that's something I feel like you have to really be careful for from collecting CD-based consoles.
Yes. But
these days, I feel like the Saturn to me is just, that was the place to get 2D fighting games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the original intention of the system when it was in development. It was not supposed to be a 3D machine. It was meant to be a 2D powerhouse. Sega had bet that there was going to be one more solid generation of 2D before the 3D transition really set in, and Sony kind of came in and knocked them in the dirt for it.
Yeah.
And so Sega ended up ham-fisting that 3D chip in there, and that caused the cost to spike up to $400, and it made it a total bitch to develop for. So that was the real misstep that defined that generation for Sega. But my God, did it do 2D well, especially once you got those RAM cartridges in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was great times. And then of course there were also the JRPGs. Shining Force 3 only got one of its installments over here. Obviously that was a three-parter in Japan. That's actually something you can experience in English now because it's been translated.
Magic Knight Rayearth on Saturn?
Sure is. Done by Working Designs, which makes it a very unique Rayearth experience. Lots of good arcade racing games. The remake of Daytona USA was pretty divisive. I liked it. Were a couple of them that really flew under the radar. There was one that Jalico made that the name of which escapes me right now, but I thought was pretty fun. It reminded me a little bit of Ridge Racer, and I guess that kind of puts it in the same category as Racing Groovy over on the PlayStation. I think one of the really defining imports for me was Dungeons & Dragons Collection, because until the 360 and the PS3, those were two really great arcade beat 'em ups that was the only way to experience them on a console. And I put a lot of time into them. It was just one of the best co-op experiences on the system. I would put it next to Die Hard Arcade in that regard. It was also the best version of Street Fighter Alpha 3. But the Saturn did not live to see it in North America.
Yeah, it the Saturn was kind of a flash in the pan for most mainstream gamers.
Yeah, and that's a real shame because all the stuff off of the beaten path was incredible.
Yeah.
And Working Designs really, really put in the hours to give us as much of that Japanese experience as possible. So, yeah, shout out to Vic Ireland and the crew he had there for the work they did, even though they were, in many cases, having to directly butt heads with Stolar to get their stuff released. And in some other cases, weren't able to do it because of that.
Yeah.
But any other games that anyone wants to bring up?
The one that I've been thinking about the most was the Sega Saturn with Nights into Dreams, which really became one of my all-time favorite Sega games.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it too also managed to be one of those PS2 import gems.
Yeah. Later on. Yeah, and it wasn't an import or anything, but the Christmas Nights disc.
Oh.
Did you have that?
I saw a bunch of them in a discount bin once at Blockbuster. And I thought, fuck it, it's a demo. I've got the whole game at home.
Yeah. Yeah, we ended Rip up selling me. Christmas Nights years and years and years later for a ton of money. But we would dig it out every Christmas. After we sold the Saturn.
How did it rate next to our Dragon Ball GT endeavor?
Oh, no. It didn't come anywhere near that. I mean, I think it was like 125, 150, which was insane.
Yeah.
But it was no $500 for Dragon Ball.
That was amazing.
Kayla, we made some crazy cash flipping games
back. Open a copy of Dragon Ball GT that I bought locally for $35. And yep. It was right before, like, maybe a year or two before they re-released it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, it released in limited quantities in North America right before Dragon Ball really became a thing over here. I had been watching Dragon Ball in fan sub form at that point, so Dragon Ball was already really a thing for me. So there was no fucking way I was going to miss out on this game, even though it was hot garbage.
It was the worst.
Yeah.
It was the worst. And then later that year, I ended up working at GameStop. I think it was still Funko Land back then. And I worked there just as Christmas help. And sure enough, somebody brought one in, and I bought it with my employee discount, which was the only freaking reason I was working there. And I probably made more off of that than I did on my paycheck for that 2 week period.
Yeah, and then I'd sent you my copy because I did not have any resources to work with at the time, and using eBay was a total pain in the ass.
It was back then.
And so we flipped a trade where I got a bunch of stuff that I still have. That made a huge contribution to my collection of Mega Man X titles, which I don't even want to think what those are those are going for today. So yeah, I flipped that. I sent that copy to Chicago for Teresa to sell. And that one was pristine.
Yeah, that one sold for $500.
And then a couple years later, Bandai re-released it for $20.
He sure did.
So.
And that was a good lesson learned, too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Demand definitely overreaches quality.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, because I made sure I played it before I sold it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it. Yeah, that was bad.
But yeah, Knights was definitely, sorry to completely derail the topic there. Knights was definitely one of those classics that really defined the Sega Saturn. And no matter what form you find it in today, I mean, it's even on Steam now. So.
Yeah, I just played it last week on Steam.
I wouldn't call it a platformer, but it's definitely one of those really pick up and play sort of platform-esque games. I used to call them pseudo platformers, just kind of mascot action games that are really approachable and have really memorable mechanics that will stay with you. It's a shame that it didn't evangelize the 3D controller as well as it could have, because imagine what the Sega Saturn could have been with analog controls.
Oh my God. Like,
if they could have started rolling out more games that were compatible with the analog stick, I would have definitely liked to have seen. I mean, they were retrofitting stuff for the Netlink, so it wouldn't have been out of the question to have Daytona USA 3D Controller Edition, Sega Rally Championship. Pretty much any of the first-person shooters on the system would have been great.
Yeah.
But, definitely Shout out to Knights. That was a standout game, maybe the standout game on the platform as far as how ubiquitous it should have been.
Yeah, there's a very good argument for that.
I think with all of the ports that it has gotten in the intervening years, you know, maybe it's starting to get its due, you know, some 25 years later.
Yeah, it can't just be the handful of us that played it being super nostalgic. You know, I wanted to play it again on hardware that we currently own. But yeah, it's got to be more than just that.
And the other thing I also think it gets knocked for at times is for being short, but all the games back then really were, except for the RPGs.
Yeah.
It was a game that you came back to because it was fun to play, not because you haven't finished it yet. And that's something that I think we've kind of lost in the industry at large today.
Although, yeah, possibly, though, some of the indie games are going to bring it back. I mean, look at Undertale. Super short, super memorable, super cool.
Yep. I think the indie scene is really bringing back a lot of the stuff that made games maybe not always memorable, but definitely of higher quality. And that is at least starting to seep back into to the mainstream consciousness. Maybe not quickly enough, but to the point where that kind of traditional design is starting to take root again. And hopefully that will lead to the revival of some of these classic franchises. I know there was the Wii sequel to Knights. I mean, that's one example of a series that deserves a full resurgence. And there are several others to follow, and a lot of them were on the Sega Saturn. So with that, I do believe we have a show. Before we sign off, I just want to point out that we have our subscription feed starting to roll out. You can find us on anchor.fm, Pocket Cast, and Spotify right now, with more undoubtedly coming very soon. And with that having been said, for Teresa Sammons and Kayla Owen, we will see you next time.